the greatest three sermons I've ever preached. Just so happened, as God has a sense of humor, I preached with my fly down. Now, here's the problem. The last time it happened, I was around 150 youth.
Okay.
And I mean, I preached the kingdom down, as they say. I was on.
Oh, God.
And I wrapped up my sermon and I strutted to the back of that hall where I knew I would be absolutely bombarded with kids telling me how I'd changed their lives, how they'd never heard anything better. Dude, did you know your fly was down that entire message? I said, why didn't you all tell me my fly was down? And that kid said, I thought it was part of your sermon somehow. And the reality is most of them didn't want to hurt my feelings,
right,
and embarrass me by calling me out. But let me ask a question. What was more embarrassing?
Oh,
having to zip up in front
far,
of everybody or
yeah.
preaching a whole sermon with
yes.
my fly down?
Yeah, by far.
I'd rather someone tell me when I'm messing up early than tell me when I'm messing yeah. up late. I'd rather be coachable than not.
Welcome to the Disruption Zone. Opportunity lives where the status quo dies. Talking to the greatest innovators, disruptors, and off-the-wall inventors we can scrounge up. You laugh, you'll learn, you'll be inspired. Now, here are your hosts, Leland Conway and Cameron Mills.
Hey guys, it's Disruption Zone. I'm Leland Conway, along with my buddy Cameron Mills. What's up, dude?
Hey, man.
We're doing another, you can't really call this a solo episode because there's two of us.
Duo. A dual episode.
A duo episode.
Not two episodes, but one episode with two people contributing.
We don't have a stunning guest today.
Well, we do. You and I.
That's correct.
Stunning in our own ways and in our own minds.
We are the stunning guest.
Yes, absolutely.
Coaching versus criticism. It's your idea to do this topic, and I love it.
Okay.
Maybe we'll dive a little into the sports world on this.
Well, sure.
I've watched coaches from the distance because of all my sports play-by-play commentary.
And non-sports ability. Sure.
I have been coached despite my uncoachability. You, on the other hand, are like the opposite of that because everybody knows about the shot and your career as a basketball player and your dad's career and your brother's career.
Yeah.
By the way, I covered your brother.
Did you?
When he was at Transy.
Yeah.
Did you know that?
Yeah. No, I didn't.
And
by the way, you left out what will be. I say this proudly, but also as an uncle. But I still think with some monicum of ability to look past the love and the blood and say, oh, my gosh, she's got it. And that's my niece who will have a basketball career
of
some
sweet.
Sort.
That's sweet.
I mean, she's doing things
is
with the ball.
Collier's daughter?
Collier's oldest daughter, Kaylee, who she's doing things with the ball at a 10 that I couldn't do at 17.
I think I would love to get into the brother rivalry if there is one.
There isn't one.
Okay.
You know what?
Is
that's
he better than you or are you better than him?
Oh, no, he's light years better than me. And that's
so
never been a problem for me.
How did he not end up at a D1 school?
So he reached a growth spurt.
Total rabbit trail here, but
that's
I think
all
right. people are interested in this.
This will lead us into what we're talking about because this actually has a lot.
He was very good while at Transy.
Here's the deal. He was very good, and this dovetails perfectly into what we're going to talk about because Collier never had to be coached. He is self-coaching.
Okay.
And that's not to say he wouldn't absorb coaching or criticism.
What
I'm saying is he didn't need to be motivated by outside of his body, his soul, his heart, his mind. He would motivate himself because he had a dream. Now, I had a dream as well, but I tended to be lazy. I tended to have a problem. I'll admit that. I tended to have a problem looking into the future and saying, if I want this 10 years from now, what am I doing now to get it?
I got you.
And I didn't do that well, and I still don't do that very well.
Right.
Collier didn't. Collier was constantly doing whatever his dad, my dad too, obviously, said to do. If this is what you – because here's what happened. We had a meeting with dad. We both – I would say I would have been in – sixth grade, Carter had been in third.
Okay.
And we had a team, we had a family meeting, right? The Huxtables used to have family meetings. We had a family meeting. Family caucus, I believe is what we call it.
I love it.
And so the family caucus was about it. We hadn't adopted my sisters yet. And so the family caucus was about, Collier and I decided that we wanted to play college basketball.
Right.
So dad had, okay, well then let's meet. So we had a meeting, me, mom, dad, and Collier, and said, okay, is this what you want to do? Why do you want to do it? Dad asked some very good questions, okay? Because it's one thing to watch a UK game and decide, oh, well, you know what? I want to be a UK player too.
Right.
That's one thing. But it's something else entirely to understand, okay, well, here's what you have to do to make that happen.
Yeah.
So that's what Dad wanted to communicate. Okay. So from this point, because my dad never pushed us into sports, never pushed us into anything. What do you want to do? Well, when I learned what my dad did at UK, and I did that through a third grade hero montage I had to make. You had to make a montage of your hero. I came home and like, Mom, who do I do it on? She said, what about your dad? I'm like, what about him? He's dad.
Right.
I had no concept of what he did at Kentucky, that he played for my beloved Wildcats. I mean,
right.
I guess I knew it, but I never put it together. It was actually my dad.
Right.
So that and then the in conjunction with Pete Maravich dying. Because Pete Maravich passed away. Well, my dad guarded Maravich when they played LSU, and so there was that connection. And when I put those two connections together, I said, I want to be a Wildcat. That's what I want to do. I want to be a college basketball player. So we had this family meeting, and Dad said, okay, are you sure this is what you want to do? We said, yes. He said, okay, then. But before you make your final decision, I want you to explain things are about to change between you and I. Your mom's still going to be mom, but I'm now going to dad slash coach, which means – I'm not going to be as loving as I always am. I'm not going to be as you know, I'm still going to be dad. I'm still going to love you. I'm still going to care for you. We're still going to have affection. But there's now going to be an added component, and that is coach.
Right.
And what he was trying to prepare us for was a constant barrage of criticism. Mm. Because you said at the beginning of this, and we've talked about this before, what is the difference, you know, the coaching versus criticism? To me, there is no difference. It is the exact same thing. It's how you internalize it. Because all criticism is pointing out your failure, okay?
Yeah.
Pointing out your weakness. Well, that's coaching.
Right.
And I promise you, especially at the level I played, that coaching, that criticism, it doesn't come kindly.
And let me interject here just for those that are tuning in. There's an application to what we're about to talk about in sports, but I think even more so for most people in life.
Yeah. No, absolutely. This has nothing to do with sports. This has to do with how we live our lives.
Yeah, it really does. And I love what you just said, because I think that was really profound when you said that coaching and criticism are exactly the same thing. It's how you internalize it.
Yep.
I do think there's an element of the presentation, but we can talk
about
it.
There is.
But going back to your brother being self-motivated, someone who is self-motivated is going to see all criticism and coaching kind of the same.
I agree. And that is a leap I had to learn, and I learned it my freshman year at UK.
Right.
But back to how Collier, who was a better basketball player, still is.
I mean,
right. Everyone in my family, okay, you're talking cousins who played college ball, uncle who never really did play ball, but he's like 6'6". You know, we had the height on one side of the family, we had the skills on the other side. We've got four or five people that played college ball in my family. Collier is by far the best. It's not even close. He went to a small school, hit a growth spurt his freshman year at Transy, but the other side of it was, so when he went up to 6'8", he had the ball handling skills of someone 6'1".
Yeah, see, that what I remember covering with him that made him so dangerous, because I was covering Georgetown College.
Yeah.
And what made him so dangerous was that he was a big guy who could – he would have actually fit pretty well in Cal's system of dribble drive because he's a big guy that could play guard or forward. But at Transy, he was center
or
power forward, but then had those skills, which
but
made
would
him –
But would bring the ball up. They would have one-on-one plays for him just bringing it up. And he could shoot. Now, he couldn't and this is not arrogance. This is fact. He couldn't shoot as well as I could.
Right.
But he could shoot. And so he was dangerous from all kinds. Look, I was done after college. My last day at UK was my last day playing basketball as far as competitively. Collier went to Italy for 2 weeks. Yeah. I had a tryout every day. The last day there, dropped 37 points on the Italian national team, got all kinds of offers. But in that 2 weeks, decided he didn't want to live abroad, which infuriated me because I'm sitting there thinking, buddy, I will be your butler. I will drive. I will cook. I will make your bed. Let's go live in Italy for 3 years.
Yeah.
He came and decided he wanted to do that. He went directly from there to a summer league team with the Denver Nuggets. Dan Issel brought him in as a potential player for the Nuggets, even though he was undrafted. First day there, broke his foot. Came back home after breaking his foot with a big smile on his face, said, I'm done.
Wow.
Just had burned down and was ready to be done with his career.
Wow, that's fascinating. Was there ever any animosity between you two, or like where he had that talent, but you were the one that got the D1 scholarship and the big stardom and all of that?
He's never acted like that. There certainly wasn't any. At the point in my career when
you guys are both kind of in the same mold in the sense that you're different people, but my impression of both you and Collier is that you're very humble people raised by very good parents who taught you not to harbor that kind of animosity.
No, we root for each other. There's never been the idea of being jealous of your brother or sister has never even entered my mind. I don't get it when I hear people talking about it.
Yeah.
My parents, you know, the only addendum to that I would add is when my parents adopted two little sisters, all of a sudden, and this is when I was in eighth grade, Carter's in fifth grade, all of their attention went to those two little girls.
Yeah.
And so Collier and I were a little bit neglected, we felt, but it never came close to the idea of embittered toward our parents because of that. So,
I get that.
Yeah, sibling rivalry never made sense to me. I wanted him. I'll tell you a quick story before we get back into this. He was playing so well at Transylvania. My career was over. This is when Tayshaun Prince and J.P. Blevins were at UK. And Coach Smith called me in because Collier had been playing pickup games with the UK guys at Memorial Coliseum that summer.
Right.
Well, Coach Smith had happened to see and was hearing from some of the guys how good he was. So Coach Smith came to me and said, you think Collier would be interested in transferring? And I'm like, absolutely. I'm answering for him. Oh, yeah. No, Collier will be a walk-out. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, I asked Collier, and Collier was unsure. Mom and Dad certainly wanted it. But Collier, and this speaks highly to my brother felt like he had made a commitment to Transylvania University
and
Don Lane.
To keep it.
And he said, I'm not breaking that commitment. And I hated him for that. I loved him and hated him because I'm like, Collier, please come to UK. Yeah. Come wear 21. You know, you're better than I was. Yeah. And I want people to know that because people think I'm joking when I say my brother was the best player in the family, even better than me and my dad. They think I'm kidding. It's not
right.
It's really not even something you could joke about because it's not even close.
Yeah. Well, Don Lane was a good dude.
Oh, he's a great dude.
And
I grew up going to Don Lane's camps. And
yeah.
His son Brian is, you know, obviously friends with Collier. And I mean, that's just a great family.
Yeah. So. No, absolutely. He's a great coach. All right, so let's get into coaching and criticism. Because I think there's an application to this in everyday life.
Absolutely.
I want to explore the point you made that coaching and criticism are essentially the same thing. So let's talk about this from the standpoint of someone who's receiving the coaching and criticism.
Okay.
Because I remember when I first got into radio, for instance, it's a hard business, as you know, to be in.
Yeah.
It's very competitive.
Yeah.
And I can remember that I'm going to say this, and I don't mean to be bragging.
I get it.
I excelled in this business faster than the majority of my peers from college.
Well, that seems clear.
And the reason was not because I was better or more talented, but because as every person I've ever worked with or for has told me, is that I was coachable.
Mm.
I came in hungry. And so as a result, I had a lot of people say a lot of things to me that might have been considered hurtful.
Yeah.
But I didn't internalize them in that way. I just decided to get better and move on. And I think when you said that a while ago, it rung true with me because I was like, if you're a self-motivated person, which I happen to be.
Yes.
You see that coaching, you're picking away the personal aspect of what you've been told.
Yes.
And you're looking for the nugget that helps you advance.
I always put it this way. Your job as a human being, whether we're talking sports or your job, or whatever it is you want to be good at, or maybe you don't want to be good at it, but it's your job, and so you have to be serviceable at it,
right?
Is if someone tells you you're doing something wrong, if they have a critique of you in anything, maybe it's your people skills, because that can certainly affect your life on the job. Maybe it's how you do your job. If someone offers you some insight, okay, because here's what most of us are pitiful at. We're pitiful at self-evaluation.
Right.
We're horrible at it,
right?
Because it's not comfortable to look deep inside your heart and your soul and say, what do I suck at? What am I just not good at?
Right.
Well, it's a lot easier for other people outside. And I think this is important, Leland, their motivations may not be pure. There may be a part of them who wants to hurt you.
Right.
So what?
Yeah, yeah.
Let them hurt you. Take what they're saying and say, is this true for me?
Yeah.
Can I accept this? And I always put it this way. You spit out the sticks and you eat the grass.
Yeah.
Whatever is not true,
yeah.
You put out. Whatever is true, you take.
Because what you're saying, if someone says something to you in criticism trying to hurt you, what is the surefire way to make them successful in their effort?
Reject everything they say.
Well, no, to make them successful is to let them hurt you.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Okay.
To fight that off, to beat that, to defeat that is exactly what you said.
Right.
Reject everything
they're saying
that's hurtful and find the nugget that's helpful.
And that's why I say reject everything. Because this is what Nietzsche said this. He said, we often will refuse to accept the truth someone shares with us merely because of the tone of voice in which it's been expressed to us.
Right.
Well, that's a surefire way to never get better at anything.
Yeah.
Is to say, I don't like how you said what you said, therefore I'm rejecting you 100%, even if it includes stuff that, you know what, I need to hear. Now, we can put part of that on those that are doing the coaching can find better ways to communicate, certainly.
Yeah.
But it doesn't matter.
Well, I think we can flip the coin later in the conversation. And we can go back to that
and
talk about presenting it from the coach's standpoint. Because both you and I now, at this point in our lives, would be more mentor than mentee.
Except, I agree, because you've got so much. You've got how many years doing radio?
20.
20 years. You absolutely would be mentor. You are, in some levels, in a great level, mentor to me. Because even though I've been doing it a long time,
when I say
I've never done it in your position. I've never had a daily 3-4-hour show. You know, I'm still doing it. So, and I will tell you this. I'm itching for coaching. And I always am, because I'll tell you one story real quick. When I started doing home health care, 16 years ago, it's 2018, this is 2004, so 14 years ago. When I started doing home health care, I was new. I was hired because I was a former Kentucky basketball player who everyone knew in Lexington, and I could get our us in back to see the doctors.
Yeah,
where
indoors.
We could sell. Yes, where we could sell our business. Right?
Right.
I basically had a pharmaceutical rep job, except instead of selling pharmaceuticals, I was selling home health care, and I still do that today. Still work for a home health care company.
Right.
The very first thing I did is I rode with two of our current employees, both women. Both of them marketers, one of them a nurse as well as a marketer. So she had a little bit more expertise. The other one was actually a social worker, and that's part of home health. So she had that expertise. But they both were great salespeople. And so what I did is I rode with one for one day, rode for with the other day, and then I wrote them both a letter. I said, here's what I'm going to do. I said, I'm giving both of you something that I rarely give anyone, but people do this to me all the time. And that is, you have permission. Regardless of your tone of voice, regardless of your body language, regardless of whether you want to hurt me or not, you have permission to always correct me. I expect to be kicked under the table 1,000 times in the next year. I expect to be told when I'm messing up, because here's what I know. I know how to, at the time I'd spent 4 or 6 years in evangelism, sharing Jesus wherever I was allowed to. Okay.
Right.
I was getting better at that, but I was still learning. I'd never done anything like this. I don't know how to talk to a doctor. I don't know what a 2-minute elevator speech is, or now it's probably down to a 60-second elevator speech. I didn't know home health, so I had to learn home health. These are two women who had done it successfully and done it at a high rate. Okay, so what is the wisest thing I can do? Put myself under them and say, teach me.
Right.
And always be teaching me. And whatever you say, I'm going to. Now, eventually,
A-B-T.
As I learned. Yeah. Eventually, as I learned. As a matter of fact, I remember one time getting an argument with one of them about the idea of the concept of constructive criticism.
Right.
Well, she said she didn't like the term. And I said, I don't care if you like the term. It's truth. The constructive, I don't care. Criticism, whether it's constructive or not, is all about how you internalize it.
Right.
If it's something that, if someone intends to hurt you and say something about you because they've got a problem, there's some ego going on, and they want to hurt you, okay, that's on them. What are they saying that could possibly be true for you that could make you, if internalized and fixed, a better person or better at your job?
Well, I think what you're pointing out is that even if somebody is being mean.
Uh-huh.
There's probably a kernel of truth to what they're saying.
There may be.
There
may
be.
But
you should check. You should check.
Yeah.
And I would say, too, because I do want to flip the coin on this and go back to the coaching side a little later, but I want to keep exploring the being coached side, because I hope that, you know, when I say that you and I, at this point in our career, would be more mentor than mentee, I don't mean all mentor.
Right, exactly.
Meaning,
I don't think you ever are.
Right. You always have to have a mentee. Somewhere in you always. I actually was just talking to a reporter this today about a study that's come out about how young people are better at spotting factual statements and separating them from false statements than older people.
They always are.
And as soon as I read that headline, I knew why.
Yeah.
And the answer is because when you're younger, you're not set in your ways. You're still open-minded enough that you're learning how the world operates. Mm-hmm. And so it's easier to spot fact from fiction. It's easier to spot fact from opinion.
Yeah.
And she gave the reporter gave me 3 or 4 examples of statements that and I spotted them all.
Yeah.
And I was like, good. Okay. That means I'm still at least open-minded enough.
Right.
You know, but that's the key is you have to constantly be willing to learn.
What'd you say? The word you used earlier. What was the word you used? That you were what?
Coachable.
That's it.
Yeah.
I mean, we can take this out of a sports illustration all you want, but that's what it comes down to.
Right.
Being able to absorb criticism and internalize it and fix your – that just means you're – if you're listening and you're willing to listen and be honest with yourself and your ego is such that it's not going to reject everything outright that hurts your feelings,
right.
You're coachable. And I told someone the other day, the best version of Cameron Mills better be on his deathbed.
Right.
That better be the best version that's ever existed.
Right. Yeah. No, I think that's a great point. In other words, every day you get up, you're trying to be a little bit better than you were the day before.
And I think that's key, too, is we shouldn't compete with each other. It should always be, am I competing with who I was yesterday?
Okay. But that leads us to the next thing. So let's say you're in a situation where you want to get better at what you're doing.
Okay.
Whether it's sports, whether it's professional, career, whatever. I think the key is, and there's a lot of people that talk about this, but I think this is a standard truth of life.
Yeah.
You know, my mom used to tell me when I was a kid, you are who you're around.
Mm.
And she was talking about the influences that come in our lives. And there's been 2 or 3 major points in my life where I've had to do purges, where I've had to go look at who's around me and go, that person is not helping me be a better person.
Yeah.
And you don't do it from the standpoint of that person is not helping me advance. That's not how you look at
it. No, it's you that say, they're negating you.
Right. You say that person is not helping me be a better person. The professional success comes if that's your attitude. So you've got to look at the people in your life. You know, every time I'm around you, and our friendship has grown over the years, but every time I'm around you, I walk away from that feeling like I got something that made me a little bit better. So, you know, that's how I track who is a close friend and who is not. There's people in the periphery that I just don't care to spend that much time with.
And I think a lot of it, too, is
they might be fun to be around, but they don't make me
better. But they don't make you better.
Right.
Yeah, and I think part of it, too, is it's easy to identify the people who truly want you to succeed.
Yeah.
And then there are people who truly it's not that there are some who truly don't. Then there are some who are indifferent to success altogether.
Right.
And I think those are the ones to watch out for. Those that, you know what, they're offering you things that, you know what, I need to get to bed tonight because I got a big day tomorrow. Oh, come on out. Come on. We're not going to be out. Right. Come on. Yeah. And then when you tell them, look, I can't. I got to be. Now there's a problem. Now they get angry.
Right.
Those are people that are not out for your success.
Yeah.
Those are people that are out to have a good time. And that's fine from time to time, but you can't have those people constantly around you. You've got to, if they don't understand what your goal is and what is important to you, then how much of a friend can you be?
Right.
And I've had to do it too, sometimes forcefully, meaning, and I think sometimes to me, it's done for me.
Yeah.
Because I think and this gets into faith and God and stuff, but I think that's part of it is I think he loves us too much somehow, sometimes to allow us to be around certain types of people.
Yeah.
And if we don't purge them ourselves, he will purge them from our lives
in
some way and sometimes it's just that person just no longer calls.
Totally agree.
Yeah.
Totally agree with that. This is going to sound like a rabbit trail, but I think it ties into
We can always bring it back.
Yeah, we can always bring it back. But it ties it coachable people. I think a lot of psychologists talk about they try to divide us into two categories, introvert or extrovert.
Right.
You know, like I'm an extrovert. My wife is an introvert.
I how about this? I got described by one psychiatrist not long ago as an introverted extrovert.
Well, see, that's
what is that?
Well, no, but I know what that is because
yeah,
I'm going to bring it up because for me, being an extrovert, I'm not like every extrovert.
Right.
Okay. So let's because I think this ties into the conversation.
Yeah.
I would call myself an extroverted introvert.
Yeah.
The question lies in where do you get your energy?
Yes.
And the answer to the question, do you get energy from other people, is obviously yes.
Yes, of course.
I do.
But
the right kind of people.
Yeah.
And come back to the self-driving aspect of this.
Which I'm terrible at.
No, but I think you are. I think you're more of that than you even know. Because here's the thing. If you wake up in the morning and you say to yourself, I want to be better today at whatever it is I'm doing.
Right.
That failing is unacceptable. Or if I do fail, I'm going to make something of it.
I like that better.
Not getting better is unacceptable.
There you go.
I think there's a third category of person, I guess, is what I'm getting at.
Okay.
Introvert, extrovert, whatever. I think it's more complicated than just like I like to be the center of attention and I'm out and about and I like to get on stage all the time.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean I get my energy, my source for what drives me and what compels me from those people.
Right.
It just means I enjoy doing that.
Or it also means you excel at doing that, which
sure.
If you're going to do what you do and what I do, which is be in the public eye and be on radio and be part of media or do whatever, then you have to somewhat enjoy it. But I don't know about you. I don't always enjoy it.
Well, maybe
I'd much rather be by myself most of the time.
But maybe this ties back to faith, because where's your purpose?
Yes. And which is why you're forced out.
Yes.
And me too. Yep.
Yeah. And so my purpose is somewhat more internal in the sense that it's spiritual and faith.
Right.
As opposed to external in the sense that it's approval and so on and so forth. And approval is important to me, but the internal purpose that I have, and I don't know if that really ties to the conversation, but I do think
it's all about self-awareness, so certainly it does.
It is, and it's whether you're a Christian or not,
right?
There has to be an internal purpose driving your life that doesn't come from the outside.
If there's not something, and I firmly believe this, if there's not something in your soul, whether it's Christ or whether it's something else that drives you, you're just going to kind of lazy-day through life. And those are the people I feel like are the most unsatisfied. I don't think it has anything to do with depression. I think it can lead to it. But, you know, those that are depressed, I know people that are some of the most faith-filled, Christ-like people you would know who struggle with depression. Depression is just an ugly, ugly thing. For those who deal with it more than any of us. But I think absolutely having that self-awareness where you're willing to say, okay, you know, what of anything that's going on my periphery, outside of me, what if this is true and what if this is not? And
right.
Then what drives me to get better? Because there also has to be part of your soul, something in there that says, I want to be better today than I am tomorrow. And when I say I'm not a very good self-starter, I'm not a very good, you know, I'm coachable, but now there's another step. Now there's a step of, okay, what are you going, where's the discipline? And I am not good at the discipline. I've got to have somebody, I'll give you a perfect example. My brother, my dad, when my dad had that rule with us, right? Okay, you want to be a college basketball player? Now we got some new rules coming in. Here are the rules. You get home from school. Remember, I think I'm in sixth grade, Carter's in third grade. When you two get home from school, it's going to be 3 o'clock. I get home from work at 5 o'clock. In those 2 hours, you can do one of two things. Okay, and he lumped two of these things together, so it's really three things, but two of them got lumped together. You can do your homework, or you can get up 500 jump shots and go for a 2 mile run. My brother never had to be told twice. I would hide. I remember one time, one Saturday, my dad, it was a beautiful Saturday in the summer, and I wanted to go play. I don't know, who knows what I wanted to go do. Probably just wanted to play video games, something stupid like that. But my dad said, you know, Cam, we had just mowed the lawn. Cam, now'd be a good time to go run. Okay, all right. Now, and he was getting on me because I had to be coached. I had to be coached. My brother, not so much. So I was like, all right, so what do I do? I don't want to go run. It's less, it's getting hot. I don't feel like going to run. So I went over and left the front door like I was going to run, turned right like I was going down the sidewalk, turned right, went over to the side of the house where the air conditioning units were, and hung out for about 20 minutes.
That's hilarious.
Now, because my thing is, when I really didn't want to run, in order to, because one day I got back from running when I hadn't run, and I wasn't sweating, and Dad said, how are you not sweating? I had no answer for that. So I decided, okay, so step number two is I got to take water and splash it on myself, right? So I get over, splash water on myself, so, you know, and then here comes Dad, and I'm over at the corner of the house. Dad comes walking down the sidewalk, looking down where I should be, turns his head 90 degrees and sees me over by the air conditioning unit, and I have never felt more shame in my entire
life. That's
hilarious. I literally groveled. I walked in, and my mom shot me a look like, you're done for.
That's hilarious.
And I went down, and I literally knelt down by my dad's feet and grabbed him grabbed him around the legs and said, I'm so sorry. I groveled.
That's hilarious.
And he forgave me, but that was me. Collier? No. Collier come home every day, and he would get his shots up, and he would get his run in, which is why he was the best player of all of us, because he did the work.
What is the meanest thing that that any coach in your life ever said to you?
Well, we know that's going to focus on one particular person, don't
sure.
we?
Sure. That's why I asked.
What is our podcast rated as far as language? How much can I use?
A few words that the FCC doesn't allow.
But we're not FCC.
No, that's what I was getting at. We allow for a few of the words that the FCC doesn't allow on radio shows.
I don't want to use them because on iTunes we have to have a.
I know.
You know, this isn't a. X. What's the word? The X.
R-rated.
Yeah, but it's what's the word? I mean. The X word, the X.
Oh, X-rated?
No.
Mature?
No, it's the same kind of thing, but this kind of language.
Yeah.
X-something language.
Adult language?
No. God, how can neither of us think of this word?
I don't know.
We'll figure it out
later.
Maybe
we don't engage in it that often.
Well, I've seen it 1,000 times because it's always it was always in the DVD I wanted to buy. Or not DVD. The CD I wanted to buy that mom wouldn't let me buy.
Yes. Explicit lyrics.
Explicit. There we go.
Explicit lyrics.
Thank you. I knew eventually one of us would get it. Okay, so the meanest thing. There's several I could pick from. Because I played for a coach who was – and this is when I learned this concept of my life, okay?
Yeah.
And I'm not saying I learned it permanently. I have to learn it again and again and again because I'm weak. But this is when I report freshman year – actually, summer of freshman year to UK. Very first day, I reported to strength and conditioning coach who weighed me. I weighed, I want to say, 221, 231
at
maybe.
6'5"?
6 foot two.
Six foot three,
I'm sorry.
I'm sorry. I thought you were a little taller than that.
No. I wear heels. And so I'm immediately berated by the strength and conditioning coach for being fat. And I mean, that's the word, it's fat.
Which
it's,
you weren't
are a
in
fat,
college.
I wasn't because of this day in my life.
Interesting.
So I weigh in, and let's just say I weigh 217. I think it was 217.
Okay.
Actually, I know it was now I think about it. It's 217. Probably, I forget what my body fat was. It wasn't good. It was like 13% or something. And so I'm immediately worked out. Vomit into two trash cans in the next 5 minutes because that's what they do. They do it intentionally.
Right, sure.
I pass out back in the locker room, and I think, what have I got myself into? I know it's going to be difficult. I didn't expect to be vomiting on my first set of leg lifts
right.
and my first lift ever.
Right.
So that night, camp starts. Now, Coach Pitino was at camp the first night, and you know when he's there, he kind of holds court. So all the other coaches gather around and laugh when he says something even remotely funny. They chuckle and chuckle and chuckle. And so the whistle blows. Coach Jim O'Brien breaks things and says, all right, we're going to go. All right, everyone line up for roll call. It's the very end of the day of camp. And there are three freshmen there. There are me, Alan Edwards, four freshmen. Me, Alan Edwards, Scott Padgett, and Antoine Walker. We were that year's incoming freshman class. And so we were actually taking part of the camp, which was somewhat insulting, but that's what Coach wanted. So fine, we did it. So they blow the whistle, camp breaks. And so I find myself – now, the last time I've talked to Coach Pitino before this moment is when he told me I could walk on back basically 8 months ago.
Okay.
Last time I talked to him. So I see him. I'm walking with Scott Padgett, Coach, me. Now, what would you expect? First time I've seen him 8 months, beginning of the season – hey, guys. Hey, Cameron, good to see you. Scott, good to see you. Get ready to work hard. We're going to have a great year. You know what? It's going to be tough. But, you know, some measure of just, encouragement.
Yeah, sure.
Or good to see you.
Right.
No. He looks at me. Now, remember, first words out of his mouth since I've seen him in 8 months. Cameron, immediate scowl on his face. You are the fattest mother effer I've ever seen in my entire effing life. You either lose the effing weight or you're off the team. Turned around and walked away.
Oh, my gosh.
I sat there stunned. Stunned. I didn't know what to do. I didn't know, okay, do I need to turn my jersey in? Should I just stand still? I didn't know what to do. I was terrified. And I spent 3 years being terrified of that man. Now, here's the other side of it, though. Because of that moment. Now, could you define that moment as verbal abuse, emotional abuse, mental abuse? Sure, there are a lot of people
who would.
Depends
on how you look at it.
That's exactly right. Yes, you could. Or, and I tried to. I went home that night, literally, and I'm not making this up. I literally was crying myself to sleep. I cried. I was living at home that summer, but I cried, and I told my mom and dad, I don't think I can do this. I don't think I can deal with this guy for 4 years. And so I went in. Let me stop. I went in and told mom and dad. Told mom especially. You know, mom, I come in crying, and I was crying. My feelings were devastated. And I'm thinking, okay, I just can't deal with it. Mom is like, oh, poor, pitiful baby. Dad comes in, wants to know what's wrong. I tell him what's wrong. He says, son, come in here. And he tells me Adolf Rupp stories for the next half hour. Like, basically, this is coaching, Cameron. This is what you signed up for. So here's the result, though, of that moment that I had with him. I was so scared. Fear is not always a bad thing.
Right.
Fear is a good thing. Fear will straighten you out. Pressure is a good thing. Pressure will make you be prepared. Coach Pitino, because of that moment, I lost 31 pounds in the next 2.5 weeks.
Wow.
Now, was that healthy? Well, probably not because I was sick the whole
right,
next
yeah.
year, but I lost the weight. The reason, and I know he's greatly disliked now by a lot of people. One of the reasons I will never be disloyal. Now, I won't always say how he acts and behaves is okay.
Right.
But one of the reasons I will always be loyal to him on some level.
Right.
And probably the biggest level.
Right.
Is because he did not have to waste energy coaching me.
Right.
I was never promised to be anything special. But because he did coach me with all the energy, muster, and cuss words he coached everyone else with,
right,
I became the best I could be. And so the biggest thing I learned in my freshman year at UK, from that moment until the end of my freshman year, is, okay, I've survived a year with this man. I know the worst, and here's what I definitely know. He doesn't mean any of it personally.
Right.
It's not personal. It sounds personal. And it will cut you to your core. He will take your greatest insecurities and shine the world's brightest spotlight on it. But he doesn't mean it personally. And if you can separate that
right.
from he hates me to he loves me and wants my best for me, then you can survive anything he says. I'll tell you one more story and I'll be done with this. The end of my career, it's his third year, my third year with him. And he's getting ready to head to the NBA, right? But it's that season. We don't know he's gone yet. And it was right after one of my teammates had transferred, had left, because he couldn't take Coach P. That's what it boiled down to. And the coaches were apparently having a conversation about, you know, well, why do some kids take the coaching? Because it's hard coaching. Why do some kids not? Coach is not a player's first kind of coach. He's
right.
not. He is tough. He's more drill sergeant. Why do some kids – why can some kids take it and some kids like this guy who just left, why can they not take it? And the idea was, well, it depends on how they grew up. Did they grow up in a tough, hard-nosed, maybe inner-city environment, or did they grow up in the white bread world and parents well off and together, and did they grow up in an easy life? And it was decided amongst the coaches that, well, maybe – it was brought forth the idea, the thought that maybe the kids who grew up in a tough environment were just tougher naturally, so they could take this kind of coaching, and kids like, you know, this other guy who had just left couldn't. And coach's backup or his rebuff to that was me. He said, well, then explain Cameron. Cameron's parents are still together. He comes from a middle-class world. His parents, you know, are great parents. You know, they're both in his life. They're both married. They're together. I've been harder on Cameron than I've been on any player I've ever had in my life. And he takes it and just keeps on ticking. Now, I got three compliments from him in 3 years, and that was one of them. That was one of the greatest ones, because what it told me is I don't laugh off his coaching. I just know it's not personal. I don't feel hated now. I feel coached.
Right. Well, the key, I think here's what you would do. I want to pull a lesson out of that and put it into X's and O's.
Yep.
Okay. When you describe what happened to you, if you're on the receiving end of criticism, I think the thing you need to do to wipe out the hurtful part is focus on the goal. And what you did, whether consciously or unconsciously, when Coach Pitino said, "You're the fattest MF I've ever seen."
Right. I could have quit.
You sort of, but somewhere inside you, you understood that Coach's goal was to have a team of Spartans.
Right.
And that was the goal.
Yeah, that's well
put. So that's how you were able to take the personal side of that and go, "Damn, I'm fat. Man, I'm all." No, the goal was.
Right.
And you saw that he was just trying to reach the goal. So when you're in a situation as a worker who's just trying to excel, your boss comes down on you, or somebody that you are looking up to in some way or has authority over you is coming down on you and they're saying mean things.
Yeah.
Try to weed through what is the goal of the organization I'm a part of.
Yep.
And if the goal of the organization that I'm a part of is something I can contribute to, drop all the stuff that's hurtful as long as there's a nugget in there that's helping us achieve that goal for the organization. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely.
And I'm not justifying rough treatment, but I'm saying if you're somebody that wants to brush that off and drive to
we used to live in a world where you and I grew up with the saying, okay, sticks and stones may hurt my bones, but words will never hurt me. We now live in a world that seems to be opposite that. Sticks and stones and words will hurt me.
Right, yeah.
Words, whether they hurt or not, that's up to you.
Right.
That's up to whether you are going to become offended, whether you are going to become hurt. And I'm not saying that everything that's said is okay, but we live in a free country where people can say whatever they want. And yeah, there are consequences for certain things that are said. But at the same time, that always gives you the opportunity to grow.
Right.
And we also got to think about this, and I think what you said is exactly right. What is the goal of the organization? You know, you hear kids all the time talk about, well, coach just doesn't like me. That's why I don't play. Coach's goal is to win. So if he feels like whether he likes you or doesn't like you, if he feels like you're going to help us win, I guarantee you, you're going to play.
Yeah.
This company's goal is to succeed, to beat the competition, to make money,
right,
to make goal, whatever it is. You're going, if you are corrected, I promise you, it's not because coach or boss doesn't like you. It's because they need more from you.
Now, on the flip side, this is also how you tell if you're in the wrong organization.
Ooh, okay.
Because if you have somebody, I have a friend who worked for an organization for many, many years.
Yeah.
And they got a new boss, and this new boss came in, and it was clear that they just didn't like my friend.
Okay.
And so the things that were going on there, they were not in alignment with the goals of the organization.
So new boss.
New boss.
Legitimately, we could say, wants to bring in their own people, so we got to get rid of the people I don't like.
Right.
I think that's fair.
But
that can happen.
My friend said, you know what? I'm out.
Yeah.
And I think the key is if you can look at somebody who's saying something to you and go, somewhere in that nut is something that will help advance what our goal here is as a team.
Right.
Then you can let it roll off. If it looks, if the reason they're attacking you has nothing to do with the goal of the team, then you may need to change your team.
Yeah.
But I want to say one thing
There can be cultural indifferences between someone that's brought into a company.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Happened to one I worked for recently. Someone was brought in who did not fit company culture.
Right.
So they're no longer with
us. And I think that people need to make those decisions bravely in their own lives and recognize that if you're in a bad organization and in a bad fit, a paycheck ain't worth it. If you're trying to achieve an overall long-term goal, you need to be in an organization you match up with what they're doing.
Exactly. And I think the only caveat to that is, the only warning is it's so much easier for us as human beings to always go back to get self-absorbed and say, this is about me.
Right.
Coach, boss, whoever doesn't like me. They just don't like me. When that could be the case. It could be. I think it's rare,
it's
but
rare.
It could be the case.
It's rare.
And I think we default to that far too easily. When what we ought to do is say, okay, what about this can I own first?
They might not like you.
Yeah.
Okay, because you're not helping them achieve
exactly
the goal.
Exactly.
Right?
I had a conversation not long ago with the boss, and this one particular sales accountant just didn't get along.
Right.
And they just didn't get along. And I said, They don't have to get along. They have to work together.
They just have to work
together. We have to succeed. They don't have to be best friends. They don't have to go out and have beers after work. They don't have to be, you know, go on play dates with each other. Yeah. They just have to work together. And if they work together, then I don't have a problem.
I don't have any sports stories like yours. But for me, what's interesting is that every major step in my career has been followed by a "you suck" comment. The first time, I kid you not.
I don't know what this means.
Well, I'll explain. Okay, so the first time I did sports,
yeah,
I was called upon because the sports guy was sick.
Beautiful.
And I got to do sports.
Don't you love it when those opportunities open up and you're ready to just walk right in?
Yeah, and I wasn't.
Well,
and I
but you were brave enough to.
I was brave enough to.
Yeah.
I didn't. I wasn't a fan of baseball. Never have been.
Yeah.
Still to this day, was not.
Yeah.
And at the time, I didn't know the difference between American League and National League.
They've changed quite a few teams,
oh,
I think, recently.
And
so
I just slaughtered that entire sports cast and the host of the show.
Well, wait a minute. Why did you even get into American League versus me? I mean, was this a radio show or was this
a... It was a radio show, and I was doing scores,
I was
going through, and I was getting confused on the names and the teams and the locations, and the host was having a ball with it.
Yeah, that's when...
And
I was
it was
say, that's
crushing.
When, that's just when you make fun of yourself,
because
too.
People and listeners...
Oh,
and this
man.
Was my first time on the air. But I can remember being... Seriously, that when I was called upon to do play-by-play, which is one of the funnest things I've ever done in my life.
Oh, I hate it. I can't imagine.
First, I was asked to do color commentary for football.
I can handle that.
And my experience with football was embarrassing.
Yeah.
And ended with me lying in a puddle of dirt and mud at the 50-yard line looking up at my father laughing at me. That was my experience with football in junior high school. Okay?
Your football. So, not your calling, not doing color.
No,
I was
going
to say,
football.
How did the color commentator wind up at the 50-mile?
So I knew nothing about football significant. And I'm doing color commentary for a national championship team. And after the season is over, my boss calls me in and he says, "Leland, you are the worst color commentator I have ever heard in my life." And I said, "I know." And then, I kid you not, the next thing out of his mouth was, "Would you like to try play-by-play?
Okay.
Well, we were starting basketball because
wow,
the football
boss.
Season was over.
It's that Jim Collins good to great.
I know.
Find the right place on the bus.
I know, right? So the basketball season was starting. Oh. I played basketball
yes,
in high
you
school.
Know basketball.
So I know the sport. And I took to it, you know, like a
sure.
duck in water.
But,
and it was everything changed at that point.
But you did the hardest part of that job. Color is easy.
Oh.
Play-by-play is not.
Yeah,
I mean,
well,
I look at what
exactly.
I look at guys that do play-by-play, and I'm like, how do you keep track of all this stuff?
Because
I'm sitting over there as a color commentator just making my smart aleck comments, and
sure.
I can handle that. But to keep track of all this stuff.
But at the time, I had the first – I'll never forget the first game that I did color for. I had 60 pages of notes. We were driving to Joliet,
yeah.
Illinois to play
Joliet,
St. Yes. Francis of Illinois. And we were and I was sitting in the back of the car and I was
studying,
nervous
yeah.
and I was scared and I was studying. And I remember we get up there and we were doing the game and it's the first game of the season. And I'm standing there. It's my first ever broadcast of doing color commentary. And I'm standing there and the play-by-play guy calls the opening kick, calls the opening play. And then he looks over at me and I'm looking through my notes and I got nothing.
Yeah.
And he calls the next play. And he looks over at me, and I got nothing. Three plays in, he calls a break, and we go to break, and he goes, "Say something, damn it!" That was awful. But then I did great at play-by-play. But
that was color you were talking
that
about?
That was color commentary.
Okay, yeah.
But with play-by-play, I took to it right away.
You had 60 pages of notes. You couldn't have done anything with that.
I know.
The first time I did Sweet 16, I had gobs of notes. Now when I do it, I take in one blank sheet of paper,
yep.
and I sit there and I write down. Because here's what I need to know. I need to know the last name of number 10.
Yeah.
The last name of number 21. That's all I need to know on each team, what the coaches are. That's what I need to know, and the rest of it kind of comes.
You learn a formula.
Yeah. What works.
Well,
now, it's not a professional prepared formula for me.
Right.
It would need to become if I ever grow in that business, but
it's
that's
for you.
What it is now. Yeah.
But then when I got into talk radio,
yeah.
similar thing happened. At first, I tried out for the show, and I didn't get the job.
Okay.
And then they had me back a couple of years later when the next guy left that did get the job, and they asked me to try again.
Okay.
And
had you done anything between that point, the first
not,
point, the second
not
point,
talk radio,
to get
no.
better, anything at all?
I was focusing on my play-by-play career.
Okay, but you were still doing radio.
Oh, yeah, I was still
okay,
doing
so
radio.
Okay, so you're still getting comfortable behind the mic.
Yeah, and so I go back, and the other day, this is funny, about 2 years ago, I actually found the audition CD for my first ever talk show.
Were you bold enough to listen?
I was terrible.
Yes.
I remember driving down the road listening to this, and I remember this one line I said. I started the show off by saying, Wow. Mama always said to eat everything on your plate, and we got a full plate today.
Well
that
done.
Was my opening
well
line.
Well done. Well
I felt like Fraser Crane.
Yeah, I was going to say.
You know, the,
what's well written?
I'm listening. You know, but it was awful. And I remember getting through the – I remember preparing the monologue, and I remember thinking, I've got this. And I remember getting all the way through the monologue and looking up, and it had only been 2 minutes.
Yeah. Oh, I know. It never goes by as fast as you want to.
And I was told very clearly after that that I was not very good.
Okay. But,
they hired me anyway for some reason.
Let me stop right there, though. Okay,
yeah.
So, and this is maybe another subject for another day, but it ties into this, is when someone criticizes you, when someone fires you, when someone says no to you, if it's in your heart and it's what you want to do, don't quit.
Well, that's the thing.
I'm going to tell you a great story. I was listening to Adam Carolla's show the other
yes.
day. The guy who does Dilbert.
Yes, yes.
What is it? Scott something or other.
Yeah, I can't remember his last name.
He reached out. He was in careers in college. He wanted to do cartooning. So he reached out, and this was before the internet. This was 30 years ago.
Yeah.
Before the internet, he didn't – I want to do cartooning. How do you do it? How do you get started? He saw a television show, only the very end of it, and got the name of the guy who hosted it. That's a good English grammar. Wrote him a letter. The guy wrote back, and the last thing he said, buy this book, do this. Last thing he said was, this is a competitive business. Do not give up. A year later, out of nowhere, the guy wrote him back again and said, just want to make sure you haven't given up.
That's awesome.
I mean, that's the story, is if there's something you want to do, then do it. And don't let one or two or three or four or five or six or seven, eight, nine, 10 times of being frustrated or being, quote unquote, stopped or being fired or whatever. Don't let that stop you.
Well,
it's in your heart. Now, you may have to do something else to supplement your income for a while.
Right.
But keep going.
But here's the point that I was going to make. Why was it every time I was told that I sucked that I got another opportunity?
Got hired.
And there's a reason. And it's because the people who told me I sucked also knew that I would not accept that as the final judgment.
So they had learned about you.
They had learned about me.
Yeah.
They knew that I was going to get better.
Hmm.
And so this is all I'm saying in this. This isn't I'm not bragging.
No,
I'm saying to people,
it doesn't sound like you are.
I'm saying to people, if you establish with the people that you work with, or on the organization that you're a part of,
some trust.
That you want to get better and you want to achieve the goals of the organization, people are going to have more faith in you than you have talent.
Hmm. That's nice.
And that's how you get better. Because there's no way I could get to where I've been with the level of talent I actually had when I started. You get more talent when you have people that have more faith in you than the talent that you have.
The scariest thing that can happen to any of us.
Because what makes you better is doing things you don't have the talent to do yet.
I like that. Yeah. Okay.
That's my point.
Or have the skills to do that.
Or the skills.
Yeah. The one thing that I think the scariest thing for any of us, no matter what we do, whether we talk like you and I do, or whether, you know, we're an accountant, or whether, is not having anyone ever criticize us at all.
Yeah.
It's the scariest thing. Because
it's the worst
thing
in the world.
You grow arrogant,
yep.
you grow haughty, and you think you've got it all figured out, when in reality, that's why those two ladies that I started working for, I said, you all always have permission to correct me, because I am an idiot, oblivious, arrogant, selfish man.
Right.
And it's not that I want to be rude to people. It's that I don't realize I'm being rude sometimes. And if I don't get a kick under the table, if I don't get pulled aside, if I don't get corrected, I'm going to continue to make the same stupid mistakes over and over again. The idea that once you hit 18, you're no longer a child and therefore no longer parentable,
right,
is absurd, whether they're your parents or not. I've had people correct me times and it hurt. I remember when we got off the plane in 1998, when we were landing from San Antonio after we won the national championship, that was the moment I picked to wear WWF had sent me a Kentucky 316 shirt.
Oh,
off
I
the
John,
this. Off the Austin 316.
Yep.
I wore that shirt because I thought, okay, it's funny. Everyone knows I'm a Christian. Everyone, you know, we just won that shirt. I was brazen. I was stupid. I was ignorant. That's all three of those things at the same time.
Yeah.
I wore that shirt. Didn't think anything of it. A year later, I got a letter from a man who said he was devastated when he saw it. And more importantly, he was devastated for his kid who saw it and asked questions about it. That hurt. And my first reaction, and I think this is the first reaction, is, oh, that's stupid. That guy, I mean, he was just trying to cause problems.
Yeah.
And I sat there and thought about it. I said, Cameron, you made a mistake. A year ago, that's not the shirt you should have worn. And you
right.
should not have ever worn that shirt, because I used to be critical of that whole thing, because it was mocking
right.
John 3:16 in some sense.
Right.
But and then I decided, well, I won a national championship. Now I can wear it. It's some sort of odd mind game I
played
with
the ability
myself.
To hypocrite myself.
Exactly. Hypocrite myself. Well said. And it hurt. But I had to say, you know what? I was wrong.
Yeah.
I was wrong. And I think the more times we can admit that, we tend to think that it hurts our – it hurts our standing with the world when we say we screwed up. Yeah, it actually helps.
But it does. Yeah,
it helps.
Right.
You can become a better person in the eyes of the world if you're willing to admit when. And I mean sincerely, not yep. if I offended you. I'm sorry. Not that crap. I'm talking about I blew it. Yeah. I shouldn't have done it. I made a mistake.
Totally messed up.
I beg your forgiveness. If it's not there, that I can't. I don't deserve it.
I've gotten pretty good at that with my wife.
Well, that's
I
where,
totally
that's where you learn
up.
It, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's where you should learn it,
yeah.
isn't it, right?
Because most of the time, I've just, like, it's literally, it's not, I'm sorry you misunderstood me. It's, I screwed up.
I screwed up, yeah.
And you got to get good at that.
And the only thing that, after that can't help is if you don't fix the problem.
Right.
And as long as you can take baby steps towards showing that, you know what, I'm working on it, then yep. that works. But the bottom line is, if no one tells you, back to our theme, you're messing up, whether it's your wife, your boss, yep. A stranger, if no one tells you, if no, last story and I'll be done. Three of the greatest sermons I've ever preached, okay? I've been in ministry 20 years. I've preached thousands of sermons. The greatest three sermons I've ever preached just so happen, as God has a sense of humor, I preach with my fly down.
That is awesome.
Now, it's not awesome, actually. It's horrible. Now, here's the problem. Here's the problem. The last time it happened, I was around 150 youth.
Okay.
And I mean, I preached, as they say, and I hate this because
this is going in the promo.
It's so sacrilegious. I preached the kingdom down, as they say. I was on.
Oh, God.
And I wrapped up my sermon and I strutted to the back of that hall where I knew I would be absolutely bombarded with kids telling me how I'd changed their lives, how they'd never heard anything better, how this was the greatest sermon they'd ever heard. Sure enough, first kid. I mean, as soon as the pastor says amen and ends the service, beeline, here come the kids. First young man to me. You could tell he was the cool kid, right? He was the cool kid youth group. Puts his arm around me, which I felt was a bit much considering how incredible I was and obviously what a sinner he was. Put his arm around me and said, dude. And I know what's coming. Dude, that was the greatest thing I'd ever heard. Dude, I've never been more touched by God than what I heard you say today. And that's what he says, dude. Dude, did you know your fly was down that entire message? And I looked down, Leland. Not only was my fly down, it was a gape.
Oh, that's funny.
It wasn't even hideable.
That's
And I
funny.
Realized I had just preached the greatest sermon with my fly down. Here's the thing, though. And I told the kid. I looked at the kid. I said, and now, at this point, all 100 kids are back there. And
yeah,
they're all laughing
because
they
done.
All saw it. And I said, I turned around. I zipped up. I turned back around. I said, why didn't you all tell me my fly was down? And that kid said, I thought it was part of your sermon somehow.
Here comes
like
the
it was some
lesson.
Sort of odd illustration I was going to use. And the reality is most of them didn't want to hurt my feelings
right.
and embarrass me by calling me out. But let me ask a question. What was more embarrassing?
Oh,
having to zip up in front
far,
of everybody or
yeah.
preaching a whole sermon with
yes.
my fly down?
Yeah. By far.
I'd rather someone tell me when I'm messing up early than tell me when I'm messing yeah. up late. I'd rather be coachable than not.
That is a great story. I think we'll leave it there because I don't think you can top that. But we need to do a part two of this episode.
Okay.
And it's going to be the coaching aspect because this was all about being coached. So the next part we'll do about the coaching side.
Yeah.
How do we motivate?
How do you mentor someone?
How do you mentor
and
motivate?
In a good way.
I love it. Yeah. All right. It's awesome. Cameron Mills. I'm Leland Conway. The Disruption Zone.